Here we go. Welcome to the actual very first episode of the Nebraska Disc Golf Podcast. My name is James Feligi. It's been great to see the positive response from everyone so far on the podcast as I'm getting this thing off the ground. Seems like a lot of people are wanting to hear about some old Nebraska disc golf stories, how courses came to be, stuff like that. So know that I hear ya, and I'll be getting into more of that with guests in the future. And actually, on today's episode, I have Anita Jackson with me. We're going to get into a bunch of state game stuff, so stick around for that. But before we get to some local news and tournament coverage, a quick word from our sponsor. Today's episode of the Nebraska Disc Golf Podcast is sponsored by Zen Llama, located in Lincoln and the city's only disc golf lifestyle store. They've got a bunch of discs available. I was told they just got some new Signature Series models from Prodigy, and they carry Discmania, which is the only store in the Lincoln area that carries Discmania. With COVID, they're operating on an appointment-only basis at the moment, so you can hit them up to schedule a time to check out what they got via Facebook or Instagram. They're located close to Tierra Park in Lincoln, so pop on by there on your way to Leagues to grab a new disc and mention this podcast at checkout to get 10% off your total purchase. Thank you again to Zen Llama, Lincoln's only disc golf lifestyle store. Okay, let's dive right into some tournament coverage here. This past weekend, we had two tournaments in the state. First off, the IAP Ironman, a C-tier event that was on Saturday, October 31st, Halloween. This was played at three different courses, one round of 18 each at Peru, Indian Cave State Park, and Auburn. In my head, I kept thinking this was called the IPA Ironman. Likely a Freudian slip on my part, because I love a delicious IPA. Moving on. Going over the list of division winners. In Pro Open, we had Blaine Wood. Pro Masters over 40, Eric Knoflacek. Good to see Czech's name up there on the leaderboard. Nice work, Czech. Advanced Masters over 40, Scott Woods. Advanced Masters over 60, Mike Wolbecker. Intermediate, Alex Doughty. Rec, Jesse Cutler. Rec Women, Kerry Doughty. And Novice Women, Anna Larson. Moving on to Raking in the Fun, a C-tier event that was on Sunday, November 1st in Waverly. This was three rounds of 11 holes. Scott Hoffman was the tournament director and added two additional holes to the nine-hole course out there in Waverly. They had a full field for this event, 54 total players. Taking the win in Pro Open was myself, James Feligi. Pro Masters over 40, Stephen Hanger. Pro Masters over 50, Troy Renault. In Advanced, Jesse Adame. Advanced Masters over 40, Randy Ziska. Randy also took home the $240 ace fund by hitting hole 3. Aside from hole 9, I'd consider hole 3 probably the hardest hole to ace on the course, so nice work to Randy. In Advanced Masters over 50, Andrew Chisholm. Women's Advanced Masters over 50, Tracy Fuller. Advanced Masters over 60, Randy Doyle. Intermediate, Ethan Lands. Intermediate Women, Kathy Francis. Rec, James Sly. And in the Juniors Division, Dominic Delahoyde. All right, moving on to some upcoming events. We have quite a few tournaments around the state in November, actually. So grab yourself some hand warmers, just get out there and play. It's not too cold, might be a little chilly, but you'll be fine. The season's winding down, you're going to want to get out there and play as much as possible. Although maybe you'll just continue into the winter. We will have some info coming up on winter leagues here in just a moment. On November 7th in Omaha, they are having the OMDGA Club Championship at Seymour Smith. A bag tag is required to play in that event. You have to be an OMDGA member. If you are, there is more info on their Facebook page, so check that for some updates and how to get registered. If you're not a member of the OMDGA, fear not, because there is another tournament on Saturday, November 7th, that same day, in Yankton, South Dakota. That is right across the border from Nebraska, about a 10-minute drive to the course. That is going to be the Legacy 2-Disc Challenge at Gavin's Point Disc Golf Course, which if you've never played at Gavin's Point before, that is an awesome little course. I was up there camping earlier this summer. They have a large campground as part of the facility, and I knew there was a disc golf course there, but didn't really know what to expect from it and was super surprised. There's some great shots through the trees, cool design. Would be very much worth your time going up and playing in that 2-disc event. The following day, Sunday, November 8th, there is the Oak Hollow Affair Tournament in Plattsmouth, Nebraska at Oak Hollow Park. This is going to be a PDGA C-tier event. There's three rounds of nine holes with short breaks in between each nine. You can get registered for that on discgolfscene.com. The following weekend, Saturday, November 14th, is the Falconwood Open in Bellevue, just south of Omaha. This is at Falconwood Park, where they have the Hullabaloo Music Festival every year. This is a PDGA C-tier event. The course is 12 holes, so for each round, you're going to be playing the layout twice for a total of 24 holes per round. There's two rounds total, and the layout will change from first to second round for an entirely different set of 24 holes for the second round. There's going to be a post-tournament players party with food and beer available for the players. That's all going to be outside so everyone can be socially distanced and safe. You can get registered for that on discgolfscene.com as well. Sunday, November 15th, Horton Hears a Wahoo, a tournament in Wahoo at Lake Wahoo. This is another PDGA C-tier event. This is going to be three rounds of nine holes with breaks in between each nine. Also, get registered on discgolfscene.com. And to wrap up your November, on November 21st, go back up to Yankton. This is actually not at the Gavin's Point course that I mentioned a moment ago, though. This is a temporary course at Pearson Ranch, also just right across the border, very close to the Gavin's Point course. Temporary layout tournament, PDGA C-tier event. So far, they have $1,300 in added cash. There might be some more rolling in. Get up there if you can. This one looks like it's going to be cool. And finally, not a tournament, but on Tuesday, November 24th, you can catch the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship Finals on ESPN2 at 7 p.m. Central. This is going to be a two-hour show that will feature the final round of both MPO and FPO, giving airtime to Haley King, Paige Pierce, Katrina Allen, Lisa Fakus, Kevin Jones, Chris Dickerson, Austin Hannum, and Calvin Heimberg. This is an amazing course that they played in Charlotte, North Carolina. I won't spoil the winners for you, but it was the largest payout in the history of professional disc golf at $130,000 pro purse, and the winners of the MPO and FPO divisions each took home $20,000. Pretty awesome to see that happening in disc golf. And now on to some winter leagues for those who just can't stop playing once it gets cold. Got to keep going year-round. I love it. In Lincoln, every Sunday until the spring at Tierra Park, you can join the Winter League there. People generally start at 1:30 on Sundays, but you can flex start any time of the day with at least three people on your card. All the scoring is done on U-Disc, so you can check throughout the day what the scores are, see what other people are shooting. Pretty cool setup Andrew Chisholm has going on at Tierra. That's a $5 entry fee, and that includes a dollar for the Ace Fund. Payouts are to the top 45% there. Lincoln actually gets a lot of people who turn out for these winter leagues. Very cool. Moving up to Omaha, there is a Glow League up there that is getting close to the end of its season. It will not be going on all winter, but for the time being, they are meeting on Tuesday nights at Seymour Smith. You can sign up for that 30 minutes after sundown. It's a $5 entry fee, $1 Ace Fund. The league is going to run until it's just too cold to play. Glow lights and tape are available for purchase at registration. Mini glow sticks are free while supplies last. You can go to the OMDGA Facebook page for weekly updates on that to make sure it's still going on. Also in Omaha, an indoor putting league. This is going to be at Nebraska Brewing Company in La Vista. It's a $5 entry fee. Sign up by 6 p.m. Bring three putters with you. $3 go to payouts. $2 go to the Spring Fever Fling. The putting league started on October 7th, but you can join in anytime, and that runs through March of 2021. Out in Norfolk, they got a glow league going on Monday nights at Skyview Park, meeting at 5:30 p.m. This won't be going on all winter, but get out there while you can. You can check the Norfolk Disc Golf Club Facebook page for updates. Jesse does a great job at keeping everyone informed there. And moving on to Grand Island, they have a handicapped league on Sundays starting at 1 p.m. at Stoley Park. Scoring is kept on U-Disc. There is a $5 entry fee, and you can find out more information about this on a weekly basis at the Grand Island and Tri-City Area Facebook page. Not sure that there's any other regular leagues going on across the state this winter. Still working on contacting some people around the state to confirm that. If anyone is listening and knows about a league in their area, please contact me at NebraskaDiscGolfPodcast@gmail.com. Give me a heads up so I can let everyone know. A couple course updates. In Lincoln at Roper West, Dom and Trenton have put in tee markers at the red and blue tees. The gold has the tee signs with the map on them. The red and blue tees are very clearly marked, easy to see. Great work they're doing out there at Roper. And this next course isn't in Nebraska, but it's so close, and it's an awesome course, and I would feel guilty just not talking about what's going on there. Talking about Treasure Cove at Iowa Western Community College. I spoke to Mike Wohlbecker earlier this week, and he was instrumental in raising a lot of money for the course throughout the last several months in order to get some improvements done this winter and in the spring of next year. Mike in Treasure Cove received a $20,000 grant from the Wellmark Corporation and also in the local disc golf communities. Mike told me people from Lincoln, Omaha, Kearney, everywhere around the state, Des Moines, Kansas City, all over the Midwest, really, were able to donate money and raise $4,000 by themselves. And another $1,000 came from the $1 course donation fee it cost to play the course. So they have some money to do some renovations up there, which is great. They are going to be replacing all 32 tee pads from the rubber pads that are currently there to concrete pads. And Mike is going to be making these tee pads right too, which I love. They're going to be 12 feet long, 5 feet at the bottom, 7 feet at the top, kind of angled in there and a rounded front of the pad. And he also told me 4 to 5 holes are going to have multiple baskets that live on the course at all times. So you have an option which basket to play to. Eventually, he says he wants to get 2 baskets on every hole, but that is something that is going to come in a little bit more time. Once all of these improvements are in, he's planning a thank you tournament for some point in 2021, and they will also be having the doubles tournament again. So lots of cool stuff going to be going on up at Treasure Cove at Iowa Western. Go check that out. It's so close to Lincoln and Omaha. Such a great course. Big props to Mike for everything that he's doing up there, as well as anyone who donated to that course. All right, and lastly, before we get to Anita, I have a little story for everyone involving a disc golfer being super lame, followed by another disc golfer being super cool. At some point in late August, I was out playing around at Campus Life in Lincoln. Super short little 9-hole pitch and putt course, nice for practicing on. Anyways, a few holes have some pretty dense woods with a ton of undergrowth if you get off the fairway. And on one of the holes, I threw my Discraft Zone up over the top of a bunch of trees, went a little bit wider than I wanted it to, and I had this weird feeling watching it sail over these trees that it was going to be lost. It was a bizarre thing, because this is like a 200-foot hole we're talking about here. So I walked up the fairway, couldn't find it, started looking around. It's a pretty short hole, so the area that I was looking in was, you know, fairly small. I thought I had a pretty good idea of where it landed, but everyone knows how that goes, right? I ended up looking for it for well over an hour. It was one of my favorite discs. So, you know, after you look around for it for 30 minutes, however long, you just kind of get this feeling like, man, I've probably walked over this thing like 10 times at this point. So I just kept going for a little while longer. Anyways, called it quits after a bit. My name, PDGA number, and phone number are on it. So figure I'm good. Someone will find it. Someone will be back walking around in the woods and I'll get it back. So fast forward about a month and a half. I'm in my backyard putting one evening after work, and I get a text from a guy saying he has my disc. So, sweet. I ask him what the best way to get it is. He says to meet him at the course in about 20 minutes. So, just to clarify, I ask him if he's talking about the Campus Life course. And then he asked me if that's what they call the course at Northern Colorado in Greeley. So, immediately, it becomes apparent that someone found my disc in Lincoln, bagged it, went to Colorado to play, and then proceeded to lose it again on the course in Greeley. So I offered to Venmo this guy money for shipping if he sends it back. He's super cool about it, thinks the whole situation is pretty funny, and obliges, sends it back. A week later, I get the package from him in the mail. Not only does it contain my zone that I lost, but he also includes a brand new Innova Champion Shrike and a mini. Just like, what a cool guy. And talk about like racking up the karma points there. Love it. So, weird saga of me losing one of my favorite discs and it making its way back home in a super roundabout way. And thank you to Asher in Greeley for being awesome. But the ultimate point of the story here, I suppose, if you find a disc with someone's contact info on there, just return it to them. Send them a text, give them a call, find them on Facebook. It's really not that hard. It's not like you have to drive it to them. They will come get it from you. And if there's no contact info, just post it on one of the area's lost and found pages. You know, it's not difficult. Just be cool. But anyways, to continue Asher's kindness, I figured I'd give away the Shrike because, full disclosure, I've been a Discraft fanboy for at least 20 years and I'm just not going to throw the Shrike. So, all you have to do for a chance at winning this thing is just share this episode of the podcast on Facebook and I'll pick a winner from there and send it out to you. Okay, coming up next, I have Anita Jackson on the pod. I've known Anita for nearly as long as my brain can recall having interactions with other humans. She's been a longtime fixture in the disc golf scene around the state, is the current tournament director for the Cornhusker State Games, and just a fun lady to talk to. Here we go with Anita. So, first thing I wanted to bring up is there's a plaque on the ground at Roper West in Lincoln next to the sidewalk on what used to be hole one,
right,
which is hole five now, kind of around the, I think it's the blue or gold tee, one of those two, but right next to the sidewalk. And there's a plaque from 1991
yes.
when a bunch of trees were planted with the Lincoln Flying Disc Club and the Lincoln JC's Club. And it was one of my earliest childhood memories was being out there that day. And I just have a very faint recollection of standing on that fairway, seeing people plant the trees. And that's, you know, that's about all I got from it.
But
were you there that day?
Me? No.
Oh, okay.
I think I started playing, not 91. I think I actually started playing in 92. Because I kind of remember that being there too. And when I started playing, that's when I met Pat. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, good old righteous parking lot frisbee deal out of the trunk of his car. And because, you know, he was, you know, working with the JCs and stuff like that and working on that course. You know, Pat was big in getting that first nine holes put in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I don't think I started until about 92.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I never really knew what the connection with the JCs club was. I mean,
well, I think, you know,
I was maybe 2 years old, so
right.
I was supposed to know.
Nobody would expect you.
Right.
But I think that Pat was more, well, you know, the Russes and stuff. He's a business guy.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming he had that JCs connection.
Okay. Yeah, I remember he would bring out that trailer to like the shootout and probably the state games too. He'd walk in, get a soda.
Yeah, wasn't that awesome? I mean, you're out there and you can have it's all the hot and cold run and cola you wanted.
Right.
And people look at you like, really? Yeah, it's free. Just go get one.
Right. Remember there'd be orange juice and there was like milk.
Yeah, he'd bring out breakfast.
Yeah.
And then there was like Red Baron pizza. And he had a couple of those, you know, janky pizza ovens. And, you know, somebody was making pizzas. There was pizza at lunch.
Yeah.
And soda. And, gosh, I think he brought out, like, Metal Gold ice cream. I mean, you know, he pulled in all those those grocery vendors.
Yeah,
and
that's great.
It was, I mean, it was great.
Huh.
What was better than, you know, a nice ice cream sandwich after,
just, yeah,
nice when it's like, you know, 95 degrees, you have an ice cream sandwich.
Nice glass of milk after finishing up 18.
It was ice cold.
Yeah. So, yeah, you kind of came onto the scene in 92.
Yeah.
When did you start doing the state games stuff, or how did you become involved in that?
The Cornhusker State Games started in 85. When they started, the organization that they were with, they actually had this, so it was your state Olympics, and they actually needed to have a certain amount of Olympic sports.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's totally all changed now. But
right.
at the time, you know, track and field good, bowling bad. So I'd done the Volkswalk, and then I'm like, you know, once I started playing disc golf, it's like, man, this needs to be in there.
Yeah.
This is a sport you guys need.
So you actually got disc golf in the state games?
Me,
then.
Kim, and Dave Nolte, if you remember Dave Nolte.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
I do.
So we went down there, and we pitched it to him and said, oh, yeah, we can get some people. Because at the time, I mean, I think there are maybe during the whole disc golf summer season, going from April down to at least October in this area, there was maybe 10 tournaments. I mean, and that's including Iowa and Kansas, and part of Missouri. You know, there just wasn't that much. So, you know, if you put another good one in there, yeah, people are going to come.
Yeah.
And so we pitched it to them. And then because we were kind of shady, maybe, you know, they didn't know much about us.
Right.
And so we were actually kind of we were sort of on like double secret probation for the first year because we could have been one and done.
Okay.
Because we were kind of pushing them to the edge of having those Olympic sports.
Uh-huh.
But you know, we just finished up year 26, so we passed the audition, buddy.
Nice. Do you remember how many people came out for, like, that first year?
The first one, oh, geez, it was a really good turnout. It was, like, probably 50, 60 people.
Okay. How many people are there now?
Oh, man, I knew you were going to ask me that. We actually, well, the format's different now. Because it's singles on Saturday, and then we do best shot dubs on Sunday. And so it's actually two different tournaments. And we just started that up here a few years ago. And this last year, we actually set a record for the number of entrants.
Cool. Just within disc golf?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Nice.
Well, you know, it's a great COVID-safe sport.
Absolutely.
And so we had it up in Omaha, and Omaha always turns out for the state games. I forget how many we had. It was 60-some on the first day. We were over 100.
Nice.
For both days.
That's great.
And the one that really makes me happy is mixed doubles.
Yeah.
We have a lot of mixed doubles. The first year I had it, nobody played. And now there were like 6, 7, 8 cards of mixed doubles.
That's awesome. Yeah. I didn't even know that was like going on at the state games.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you do it like as pro teams, or is it just still like an all amateur event?
Well, right now it's AMs, but you know, I never have understood the stuff lately. You can take money and still be an AM somehow, you know? You take it. I don't really understand all the ratingsy business, but you know, I don't play a lot of PDGA events anymore either.
So yeah, it was in Lincoln at Roper forever.
Right.
And then it moved out to Kearney for a while.
The first time we went, it was when they had the Special Olympics.
Okay.
We're in Lincoln, and the Special Olympics were going to be on state games weekend.
Okay.
But, you know, they couldn't move the Special Olympics.
Yeah.
And so the state games was kind of find a weekend, we'll set you up, we'll do this, off we go. And I forget when we were, because we were off that, we weren't in July. I think we were in June. And it's like, because we're going to have the shootout. The shootout was going to be in May, and we were going to be in June. It's like, well, I can't have two tournaments in Lincoln.
Right.
Boom, boom. You know, that ain't going to work. And we're like, well, let's go to Kearney. People out in Central Nebraska wanted us to come, and we're like, Kearney's a good course. Let's go there.
So it moved to Cotton Mill then?
So we were out at Cotton Mill.
Okay.
And actually, I think we took over Cotton Mill and Centennial.
Cool. I always like Centennial. That's
another good stretch your legs kind of course. You get off the highway, you go, you throw your 9 at Centennial, get back in the car, and you go.
Yeah.
And so we use that for kids, because that's an easier kids course. It's nice and flat and no big deal. But most everybody was out at Cotton Mill, and they liked it. And so then we thought, well, heck, we can do this. And the state games, once the lid was open, you weren't ever going to get the genie back in the bottle. So we kind of been moving around ever since.
Okay. So after, it's in Omaha now, right?
We had it in Omaha this last year, and I haven't talked to Chris specifically, but I'm thinking we may actually go back there again next year, go to have like Advanced at Hummel.
Nice.
And they have a new, nine-hole course in at Hanscom.
Yeah, I just saw that the other day.
Yeah, and when we had the State Games of America back in 15, we played at Hanscom. They set up a temp course out there, and it's a really nice park, big trees.
Okay.
And so they put a 9-hole there, and it's like, well, heck, we can come up with 9 baskets. That's not a problem.
Yeah. Is that the park that's it's right next to like the Gerald Ford birthplace, or is that?
It could be. I'm not really familiar where Hanscom is.
Yeah, I know. I did a temporary course tournament years ago. Yeah, I remember walking to the Gerald Ford birthplace over the lunch break.
It's in the middle of town.
Okay.
Because I know that Omaha used to have, they had one, it was out at Walnut.
I don't know that.
It was a park kind of on the west side of town. And I remember because I was playing with you, and we'd pick up the walnuts, and we were tossing them, putting them in your disc golf bag, and you'd reach in, and there was another stupid walnut in there. Because we were giving you crap.
Yeah. So, that's funny that you say that. I actually just cleaned out my disc golf bag for the first time in probably ever a few weeks back.
Find a walnut in there?
I did not find a walnut in there, but there was just so much random stuff.
Like, oh, yeah.
CDs that I would find on the course, golf ball.
Yeah.
I had a stick in my bag that was just like a 90-degree angle that I probably picked up because I thought it was cool one day, and it lived in my bag for like 15 years.
There you go.
It's like, probably don't need to be carrying around the stick anymore.
I would always have an ungodly amount of loose change in there for some reason.
Yep.
You know, I'd clean out my pockets and I just put it in, and I never cleaned it out.
Yeah.
And then you had the birdie bag in there, so it's all just dust covered, you know, quarters and dimes, and they're like, ew.
Yeah, the birdie bag with sawdust.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They still make those. Those are awesome.
Yeah, I have one of those. I recently bought a new one. They're not called birdie bags, like a grip sack or whale sack or something like that.
It's a different one. I think the birdie bag is still there.
Okay. Nice.
But there's a lot more of them. Yeah, yeah, because I have a couple of the whale sacks too.
Yeah.
But the old birdie bag with the kill drying sawdust, yeah, that's still going.
Right. I got to say, the new whale sack, much better design. Not getting
really
sawdust
cute.
All over the place. Yes. And it's like, wow, that's great that someone thought of that. So yeah, now it's at Seymour. Was the State Games anywhere else in between Cotton Mill and Seymour?
We have had, it's also been at Lake Hastings. Not this last year, not in 20, but in 19, we were in Kearney and Hastings. It was Kearney on Saturday, and we went Hastings for doubles on Sunday.
Nice.
So we actually, did them both.
Okay.
We've played at Mahoney.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's 5 minutes away from here.
Right.
Love that course.
And, Jake is, I assume he's still the superintendent there.
Yeah, I believe he is. I looked that up the other day.
He wanted to move the course that they had for something or other, and he went and bushwhacked all this stuff out, and he laid out this new course out there and put it in and sunk the sleeves, and we played that course for the State Games, and that was one of those hot.
Yeah.
State Games hot kind of State Games. And then I'm not sure what happened. And then he picked it up and put it back where it was. That one course right there was only, I think, ever played at the State Games. And then I think, they were going to put a zip line or something in, and, funding for the parks is always weird.
Right.
So then it ended up going back to where it was before, where the original course was.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I love that course out of Mahoney.
Yeah, no, it's a fun course too.
Just a sucker for a nice manicured fairway. Like it's not super difficult necessarily, but it just looks so good when you're playing out there.
Yeah,
just
there is wonderful. Something about a nice green fairway.
I know, beautiful. Yeah, I was told that Jake also helped get in the 9-hole course out at Pawnee by Lincoln too.
Wouldn't surprise me because that's another Game and Parks thing.
Yeah,
you could pick a lot worse people to design a course than Jake. He knows what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you guys still do the final nine?
Oh, yeah.
Is Chris still just kind of a safari nine that he designs?
Yeah.
I just remember that being such a prestigious thing in my mind when I was growing up playing.
We'd like to think it's still a thing.
Absolutely. I mean, that's very cool. I don't see a lot of tournaments doing the final nine thing and everyone walking around and watching. Just builds a lot of excitement around it. And
you got to have one that's the trick is getting one that is kind of gallery friendly. You got to have some shade, boy, because again, this year it was kind of warm this year. It wasn't as hot as it has been. It wasn't one of those 107 degree jobbers, but it was pretty warm that day. And that's why Seymour was good, because it still has the trees and stuff out there, and you always had places to get in the shade and that. I really like them when there's a little bit of jockeying and moving around.
Yeah.
When somebody, oops. And he had one hole there that it was, if you hit the line, you were golden. If you didn't, you were screwed.
Yeah.
And those, I love those kind of holes. We'll see who's playing it safe and, who's just willing to tin cup it if they could.
Right. Well, yeah, there was one that Chris always did in Lincoln that I believe was called the snowman hole.
Oh, yeah. The snowman hole. That was a great
Gary
one.
Gary Goff, if I remember correctly.
He took the snowman on that one.
Did that. But
because we went out there, Chris and I, we would go out there and we were looking around and we were just kind of standing up there. And I think that was when that old hole number 9 hadn't been taken out yet. And we're looking and he goes, what do you think about here to the parking lot? I'm thinking that's awesome, is what that is.
Yeah.
Because the actual shot was to lay up. For the second one, you'd gun all the way up there.
Uh-huh.
But, guys don't always think about that.
Right.
I can make that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many guys have been in the creek. It's a lot of guys have been out in the creek.
And yeah, for people listening, that was teeing off from where the current one gold or yellow tee pad is at Roper. And the basket was up by the parking lot.
Right. Where the playground equipment and stuff was, right in that general neck of the woods. We kind of would move it around a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, people would start playing that, and it's like, get too comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And we'd move it around some just to keep
I don't remember what I scored on that hole ever. I don't think I had anything too atrocious necessarily.
You didn't take snowman, huh?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, if you can hit that with the trees and the elevation and stuff, nobody could pin that thing. I think it'd be really hard to pin.
Oh, yeah.
But, you can make it across. And I've seen some guys, you know, run at it for, you know, two that, you know, just managed to do mm-hmm. that and, you know, got it right where it needed to be. So you aren't behind some big old pine.
Yeah. I love the idea of holes like that, that are very much have to have like a specific shot at one point in the hole
right.
to be able to score well on it. And
right.
it's not just a big wide open, how far can I throw type right. of thing. Like,
not just a distance contest.
Yeah. I mean, it's yes. golf. There's placement exactly. in it.
There is. And, well, I remember the one where he'd be up on the hill. Oh, I think it was hole 8.
Yeah. So it's the basket of right. four
and,
now.
And you'd throw it over to the 4 basket and it was a total blind shot.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you had to chuck it over the trees.
I remember doing that
yeah.
one. So were you ever the president of the LFDC?
Oh,
were
heavens
you just,
no.
Heavens no. Okay. But I mean, you were pretty heavily involved in that for quite a while,
I was
right?
the, yeah. And I was the state coordinator for the PDGA for
right.
a number of years. They gave me a box, this huge box of business cards. It was like 500 of them.
Just said state coordinator?
Well, it had like the PDGA logo.
Nice.
And it had, you know, your name, state coordinator, all your contact information, the contact information for, you know, the PDGA headquarters in Georgia.
Yeah.
A little bit. I still hand those things out.
Nice.
It's hard to go through 500 of them.
Yeah, that's a good look.
It to be is. Able to pass out it's of kind those. Of a cool looking card. And they're like, hey. I'm like, yeah.
Nice.
And I think I got a shirt from them that, you know, I had the PDJ and had my name and number on the sleeve and the whole bit.
Sure. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have some personalized stuff from the PDJ. Actually, I have a disc hanging over there on the wall. My Eagle Club membership.
Excellent.
That my dad signed me up for when I was a kid.
Yep.
Yeah, sent out some personalized stuff. Yeah, that one always gets some looks when I'll sign up at tournaments where if I'd play like an out-of-state event where I didn't know anyone and it would show up as like a lifetime membership. They're
yeah.
like, what? Had someone say like, what does this mean? And like the tournament director like didn't believe me or something like that. Because I think they started that when they were kind of putting together the international disc golf
yes.
thing. And like, it's yeah. like Appling, Georgia
yes.
or something like that.
Yeah. And I think that was one of their fundraiser type of things. You could have Birdie Club, Ace Club, and the Eagle Club. And if
yeah.
you did that, then, you know, and that wasn't a small amount of money
yeah.
to get that. But, yeah, you were.
Oh, well, I was a kid.
Hey,
so
for you,
thanks,
you know, that's value
dad.
For money right there, buddy, with
right.
you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would really love to get down to that facility down
in Georgia.
Oh, I
think that'd be
Georgia.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you could see down there. You know, if you look at. Oh, some of the stuff on the web, people selling discs. Man, there's some serious Frisbee stuff from way back when.
Uh-huh.
Because I know that, you know, Mr. Bill's got, you know, the whole Pluto platter set.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I was looking into some of those courses the other day, and I believe John Houck designed them.
Yeah.
And I was actually down this past weekend, down in the Ozarks, and we stopped through Columbia on the way and played Harmony Bends,
mm-hmm.
which is a course down there that John Houck designed.
In Missouri?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just right on the outside of Columbia.
Yeah, I've played the courses that are in town.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one was phenomenal. Like one
oh,
of
yeah.
the best courses I've ever played. And
we,
long and difficult. And like we were talking about with the state games earlier, mm-hmm. it's one of those courses where you need to be landing in this area
right.
to set yourself up.
And right.
I just loved that. So
he,
cool.
Kim and I were going to go to Rome on September the 11th. 2001.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We didn't go. so we drove down to New Orleans. And because, you know, as we like to say, that's a whole nother country that you can drive to.
Yeah.
And so
absolutely.
Coming back around, because we had all this time blocked off. So then we went through Austin. We called him up. You know, this is way back when in the old Wayagon days. And he's like, yeah, sure. Come on out.
Nice.
And because he had his own course, Circle R.
Right, okay.
And he had another one that was supposed to be even better, San Saba, but that one's gone. But that was supposed to be, you know, the real cool one. Not that Circle R is bad in any way, because
yeah.
Circle R was really cool.
Uh-huh.
And so it was outside of town. I think it was in Wimberley, Texas, which is outside of Austin. So we drove out there and met him, and he was doing something else. And it was like $5 to play. And he's like, oh, no, just go ahead and play. Just play all day. It's fine.
Yeah.
And so then he takes us back into, because he was doing Millennium discs at the time.
He was the Millennium guy?
He was the original Millennium guy, yeah.
Did not know that.
And so he takes us back into the warehouse, and you're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
it is
yeah,
a
that'd
warehouse
be sweet.
Of Frisbees. And I ended up you know, we bought some stuff, and I ended up getting, I always loved those Omega drivers. It's an Omega AP with the putter. Well, this is like a really stiff one.
Okay.
So it's an Omega driver. And Chris Oyen loved them. I loved them. Chris loved them. I bought a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And had them shipped up here. And then I also sent them off somebody, and they got tie-dyed and the whole bit. But yeah, we walked in there, and it was just like.
Yeah, I've never been in like a disc factory or like big warehouse like that
before. He had that. He was also selling Innova too.
Okay.
Because I think at the time that Innova was pressing his stuff.
Right. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Remember that.
And because honestly, I think that Dennis and Annetta down in Harrington have kind of taken over a lot of the Millennium business down there too.
Okay.
I know that they're a big part of Millennium Discs now, but I think at the time, because it's hard to stamp them, you know, to actually like, you know, squeeze out the disc.
Uh-huh.
And so I think what he did is he had his molds and kind of subcontracted with Innova to do them. Now, I could be totally wrong, but okay. He was also selling Innova stuff. So I just remember we came there and Kim had gotten it was a Dragon. It floats.
Yeah, I was going to say. I
and
thought that was the floating
we were coming
one.
Our way back home, and we stopped in Wichita.
Uh-huh.
And again, you know, you got out of the car, and I don't know if you remember Iqbal Jahan.
I remember the name. Yeah, Kansas City guy.
He was down there.
Right?
Yeah, he was down in Wichita. So we get out of the car, and it's like, hey, Ick. And, you know, so we're out there. And Kim, I remember he had that disc. And we were right by, because that course is right on the river. And he goes, I'll try this one. And I'm just, it kind of was one of those Bugs Bunny moments where you're kind of like, you know, putting the finger up like, wait a minute. And he just let that thing go. And he turned it over. And that thing is right in the river. And then, you know, because then it's bobbing on the wave. So it's like, you get to see it as it's going away from you. This little red disc is like, bloop, bloop. Yeah. So he had that disc for like, you know, 4 days. It was gone.
So I'm assuming you and Kim have a pretty hefty collection in the basement then,
yes.
Right?
Yes, it's been cleaned out a couple of times, and you know, it's like your t-shirts. You clean them out, and then there's a void, so it gets filled back up again, it seems.
any interest in selling any of that stuff, or you just
hold on to
it? Oh, come
on over.
I'm not much of a...
What did it take to set you up in this disc?
I'm not much of a collector, personally, really.
But. Well, I'm also a USDGC partner, and I have been for quite a while. So I have some of the old partner rocks.
What does that mean?
Way back when, in about 2001, was about the first... Yeah, because I think this was the 20th anniversary of the USDGC.
Okay.
And they sold these rocks. They were champion rocks, and you couldn't buy them. They were a fundraiser, and they were selling them for $25 back in 2001, and you're going, who in the world would pay $25 for a disc?
Yeah, that was a lot for a disc back then.
It was. Well, it was all to raise money. Well, if you happen to have one of those original $25 discs in unthrown condition, I mean, there weren't that many of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, to the real rockhead, that's like one of the holy grails.
Sure.
And when I started doing it, I mean, you called them up. And, you know, they'd sit there and talk to you on the phone. I got one here in red. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, I'll take that one. And so I've got some of the really, not from the first year, but probably, I'm trying to think, maybe 2004, 2005 is when I started. So I have some of them that are that old. There's some of those that'd be worth some money.
That's funny that you mentioned that about just having to like call someone up.
Yeah.
Obviously, it is not like that anymore.
No.
But I remember my dad would collect, there was like the Disc Golf Hall of Fame discs that would get one that was released every year, and then it would come with everyone signed it who was inducted that year.
Right.
And he would always get a new one. And I think the guy's name was Speedy?
Speedy Guerrero.
Speedy Guerrero. Okay.
Yep.
I just remember my dad would have to try and call him like once a year to get one of these discs, and that was their only way of communication.
Yeah.
Like if a guy changed his phone number or something like that, my dad's line of contact was just cut off, which is pretty funny to think about in modern times.
It is. But
I remember he would order stuff from Discovering the World quite a bit. And I actually ordered some discs from them about a month back.
Yeah, they're still in business.
Yeah, I wrote a note on there. It's like my dad ordered stuff from you guys in like the early 90s.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm glad you're still in business. Yeah. And when they sent my disc back, there was a handwritten note that was like, thanks, I'm glad we're still in business too.
Yeah.
Good. So yeah, another thing I wanted to talk about. You were the 1995 Advanced Women's Doubles Champion with Juliana Korver.
Oh, no, I was not.
You were not?
You want to hear the story?
Well, yeah. I thought you were.
No. Should have been. In revisionist history, we would have been.
Oh.
She got me to go to Am World in Cincinnati. And it was in the second round. And we played the course out of order.
Oh, no.
And at the time, every throw you had was a practice throw.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, it's, you know, we're 7 strokes down. And we're like, we look at each other. It's like, it's on. It's on.
Oh, boy.
And we lost by 1.
Oh, no.
And if you go like a few years down the line, by the time she came around here in 2001 doing her little discraft doubles.
Yeah, I remember playing
about it. They had changed the rules. And you wouldn't take all those things. You would have taken like 4. You would have had to take like, you know, 3 penalty strokes or something like that. So then, yeah, we would have won.
Huh.
We came in 2nd.
Oh, geez. That's...
She won that year.
Yeah, that's... I came in 8th. I didn't know that.
In Am World, she came in 1st, and we should have... It is just like, oh, God! My one shot at it!
Yeah. I can understand that frustration, for sure.
But then, like I said, when she came back around in 2001, they were doing the discraft doubles thing, and... Because she wanted to know, you know, because they were camping. Uh-huh. And she goes, "We really need a shower. Can we come to your house for a shower?" I'm like, "Yeah." And she goes, "You going to play?" I said, "Well, I could play with you." "Oh, well, you know, it's a random draw." And so we're out there, and I'm, you know, got my little 4 clubs or whatever, and looking around. And I finally go up to her, and I just, you know, stick my 4 clubs up, and she's like, shows me her 4 of spades, and I'm like, yeah,
there
we got the band back together.
Yeah.
And we won there.
Nice. Okay.
all the big gun advance guys, nah.
So, yeah, I was looking earlier today, and I believe that was her last advanced event that she did was in Cincinnati at that tournament. And then
I think she actually went to Pro Worlds the next month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back when you could do that. You know, if you won Am Worlds, I think you got a... You got an invite to go, because I know there are more than one person that did that. Because I don't know if Tim Gill, because he was the one that won Am Worlds that year too.
Okay,
and I think he might have gone to Pro World.
Cool. Yeah. Well, yeah. Then she went on to win 5 world championships, right?
Yep. As JK, I would like to say, yeah, my old doubles partner.
Yeah, got the JK AVRs and all that stuff.
Yeah. But
how did that relationship between you and her start? Because she was from somewhere in Iowa, right?
Yeah,
so just like meeting at a tournament or something?
She was going to school, I think, up by Waterloo. I don't know if she was still going to UNI. I know that she got a master's degree at Iowa State.
Okay.
But I think she was going to UNI at the time. And we started playing at the same time.
Oh, nice.
But she was always 10 years younger than me. So, you know, just a damn kid. Sure. And so we just met at a tournament. And I think Kim and I went to... Oh, it was the Black Hawk Metro Disc Golf Open in Waterloo, Iowa, and played there. I mean, we played in Omaha, we played in Lincoln, you know, we played together quite a number of times.
Yeah, I was looking at her stats on PDGA website and saw that she came down to a call to arms several times, mm-hmm. Spring Fever Fling, all that stuff, back when Bill was running all those.
Oh, yeah, no, we played a number of times. She was always fun.
I did see that in my... my half-assed internet research on Anita Jackson before you came out here, which pretty small internet footprint, by the way. Couldn't find a lot on you.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, but you're listed that as a designer with the Disc Golf Course Designers.
Yes,
which was started by Ed Hedrick and Chuck Kennedy.
I think Ed was out of it at the time. It was the Designers Guild, and Chuck Kennedy was in there. Yeah,
I think there's 4 people in the state.
Yes.
Listed on
Chiz
that.
Is one of them.
Yeah, Chiz and Aaron Martin from Omaha, I believe.
Yeah, I haven't seen Aaron Martin.
Either have
in years.
Have you designed some courses?
I got paid to design one course.
Nice.
And they I go out. It was, I hate to almost tell you where it is, because I gave him this design, and then I went back to go look at it. And it's like, well, why did I even come out here? You put nothing in where I had it.
You designed it and gave them the template, and then they just kind of did their own thing?
Yeah. Because all you had to do was the design.
Okay.
You know, at the time, it was through, it was with Innova.
Okay.
And it was, had to do with getting courses in conjunction with school districts.
Nice.
And so that's what I did. And he goes, hey, I got a job. You can do this. And it's $500. I'm like, sweet. And so I gave him the whole, I had the map and I showed him everything where it was. They said, yeah, you're here to here, blah, blah, blah. And because I asked him, I said, where can I go? He goes, oh, the whole park's fine. Well, apparently the whole park was not fine because sure. I went out there to go play said course. And I'm like, where is everything?
It's yeah.
Like, yeah. But hey, the check cleared. So.
Okay. Yeah. Designing a course is becoming increasingly higher on my list of things to do at some point in life.
You know, it's
something
one of
that
the,
always goes through my head when I yeah. go to a new park that it's not there. I'm just always thinking about that.
And that's kind of one of the cool things that we always used to do when on the state games, on when we did Sundays and we had the mystery course.
Yeah.
And you were basically, you know, in Lincoln, we played the course backwards.
Right.
So you had pin positions. Now go find a new tee.
Uh-huh.
You know, something that's a totally different look. And just looking at your course, like it's kind of backwards. It's really kind of fun because you're looking at different lines. You're looking at, no, it's like, because you're on autopilot on the old Roper West. I mean, you know, you just, you knew where everything was.
Right.
This is what I throw. This is how we do it. You know, and that way everybody's in the same boat. Nobody's played it.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's starting it brand new. This is your first time playing this thing. So we always tried to mix it up a little bit. All the time. So it's like, you know, well, this is where they had it last year. Well, that ain't where we have it this year.
Right.
And so it was kind of one of our attempts at, you know, sort of leveling the playing field, kind of taking away a little of the homey advantage.
Absolutely.
Huh. So, yeah.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about, or I was talking about me cleaning out my bag and finding a bunch of old stuff. Mm-hmm. I had, from a couple different years, old State Games mystery course maps mm-hmm. that had, you know, the classic Kim design on them.
Oh, yeah. That man is nothing if not a map lover.
Oh, yeah.
You need a map. I'm like, okay, fine.
I love Kim's design work.
Yeah.
It was really cool to go back and look at that stuff.
Well, for that, yeah, you kind of did need a map. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. I mean, Roper, you know, the old Roper, you really didn't need a map. I mean, you just boom, 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 boom.
Sure. Yeah, pretty intuitive.
I always love it when they did the Roper East way back when. And you always had Barking Dog Corner. You'd go the first time they put that course over there, you'd go there and there was some dog in this yard and it was just barking at you all the time. So, you know, you'd always like putting little things in there and I said, well, that's Barking Dog Corner right there. Cause you'd go there and
that's funny.
All day long, that dog was tired after a tournament day. Cause he was barking all day long.
Yeah. I believe it's hole 10 there. In person's backyard who lives right next to the tee.
Yeah.
They have, I can't remember if it's like a rooster or like some geese or something like that, but there is a lot of them in the backyard and they're making a lot of noise.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that was Barking Dog Corner. Maybe.
Barking Dog Corner was, you know where the tennis court is?
Yeah.
And you're looking to the south and then you'd go over to your left.
Yeah. And, that's and this then, house.
Right. That was Barking Dog Corner.
Okay. Well, person just got some new animals, apparently. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you for coming out and being the first guest on the podcast. Very much appreciate it. Yep. And talking about the state games, everything else, sorry to bring up the narrow loss in Cincinnati due to the misplayed course.
I'm not bitter.
That's all right. So, yeah, thank you again for coming out. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right. Thanks to Anita for joining me on the pod. Thanks again to our sponsor, Zen Llama. Hit them up if you're in Lincoln or next time you're in Lincoln for all your disc golf needs. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your listening platform of choice so you can catch the next episode. If you like what I'm doing here with the pod, please do me the kindness of giving the podcast a rating on iTunes. That would be fantastic. Remember to share this episode of the podcast on Facebook for a chance to win that champion Shrike. Maybe I'll give away some other stuff in the future, too. We'll see as time goes on. By the way, this awesome music playing in the background, the podcast theme music, is a song that I recently produced for my friend Steady Wells. He's great. Check out his stuff on Spotify. Steady Wells. If you have any questions or comments for the show, email me at NebraskaDiscGolfPodcast@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Maybe I can start doing a little mailbag section if anyone has any burning questions they'd like to send in. I don't know. We'll see. We'll just see how this thing develops. Thank you for listening to the Nebraska Disc Golf Podcast. I got to get out of here, trying to sneak in a quick nine before it gets dark tonight. Talk to you soon.